She joined the congregation, I don't know, it was probably 3 years ago, something like that. And she and her husband were, you know, brand new to the area, full of energy and, you know, among the busiest of young people you'd ever want to meet. But they were determined to meet people, to find their way in this new community of theirs, both of them with new jobs and, well, both of them with a lot on their plates. For her part, I knew a little bit about whence she had come. She was deeply Lutheran, genetically Lutheran, chronically Lutheran, Lutheran in her bones. And I think that what drew her to our Savior's was the sound of it. Oh, yeah, the sound of the espresso machine and the sound of laughter. But mostly it was the sound of the band, the sound of the organ, the sound of the choir. She joined the Bell group, and they played melodies that she had recognized, one she knew as a kid. Well, she grew up sitting next to her mom and dad in pews, you know, way back home, grew up with that holy habit, that righteous routine of arc and cycle of the church year. She knew what month it was when she heard, O come, Emmanuel. When is it? See? All right. She knew, too, that whenever she heard the sounds of, hark, the herald angels sing. When is it? See, there's a bunch of chronic Lutherans in here. Somebody said July. You get her out of here. Ah, oh, sacred head now wounded, with grief and shame weighed down. When is it? Yeah, Holy Week, Good Friday. Beautiful Savior. Probably Christ the King Sunday or just any old Sunday that Lee gets a chance to pick the songs, you know. But all of that, through a course of a whole lifetime, shaped her sense of identity and her understanding of her place in the universe. All those songs, they just found their way inside of her and kind of crafted her being. It wasn't long after a couple years of being here, this young couple, well, she was pregnant. And that was a joyful time. It was a mix of wonder and discomfort, of angst and awe, and kind of the realization that now things were going to get a little more complicated. She kept on in the Bell choir, but she would tell me it got harder during rehearsals and especially during the times they played in church because the baby would kick her right in the middle of these grand and glorious tunes. By the time this kid was born, I think she'd been to church, I don't know, 20 times. By the time this kid was born, she had prayed the Lord's Prayer. By the time this kid was born, she had shared in so many songs of the people of faith. She was shaped in the womb. She was nurtured in utero, formed by those experiences prior even to emerging into the life of this world. I wonder if that's part of what Luke is trying to get at in his gospel. If Luke would have us believe that Jesus was born into a family of musicians, if Jesus was born into a family of singers. After all, he would have heard it. He would have known it even before he came out. He would have been in the synagogue on the Sabbath. He would have heard the sounds of the festival of booths and the Passover Seder. He would have been to Jerusalem at least one time over, cycling in and out, seeing it all from within and from without. Early, early on, Jesus' life was becoming aware of the glories of the temple, but also the darkness of its icky secrets. Early, early on, Jesus was becoming more aware of the devotion of the people and the vanity of the leaders. Even before he was born, Jesus must have been aware of the promise of faith, but also the problems of the institution. One day, Jesus' mother, Mary, goes to visit another extended member of the family. We're guessing, was it a cousin? And what did the word cousin even mean back in the day? But Mary goes to see a cousin who is also with child. And Jesus, still in her womb, arouses a response in the other woman's body. And that baby starts to kick and jump and, I wonder, dance. Now that stirred up Mary. There was a mix of gratitude and awe and maybe some trepidation in her. So what did Mary do? Do you remember? I wonder if she did what she always did when something special was going on. You know what she did? I wonder if she did what she always did when there was a kind of a holy moment going on. Do you remember what it was? You remember what she did when that overlap between heaven and earth took place? She sang. She sang. My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. And her song goes on, His mercy is for those who fear Him from generation to generation. And then there's another verse, and she goes in and says, And He has shown strength with His arm, and has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. And then like a capper at the end, she sings, And He has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. How often did she sing that? She sang it when Jesus, you know, was in here. Did she sing it again when Jesus was here? You know, when Jesus was here. When He was here. When He was here. Did it stick to Him? Did that song that she sang adhere itself to His life and His purpose and His imagination, to His destiny? I wonder if Mary sang it again and again. If she sang it at home, if she sang it as a lullaby, if she sang it while she was doing the laundry. Coming back to those familiar strains and refrains, even in the midst of what for her was becoming an ever increasingly difficult circumstance. Now, even if you were to fast forward 30 or 33 years ahead, now this grown-up Jesus shows up again in his hometown. And he sees all the familiar sights. He goes to synagogue, as Luke puts it, as his usual custom. He goes in and, oh my gosh, there's all those old ladies that I knew when I was a kid. Does he go in there and say, oh my, those are people who work for my dad. Oh, I'm not sure I want to be here. I think I carved my initials in that bench around the corner in the back there. Did that go through his head? Smelling the smell of the candles and the incense and the little lamps that they had going in the corner. But there's a certain point during the gathering there on that Sabbath day when, as if prompted by Kimberly herself, he gets up. And what does he do? He takes the scroll. He's the reader that day. So he unrolls it and unscrolls and unscrolls and scrolls and scrolls and goes and goes and goes, finally till he gets to the place where he finds that old song again, that old Isaiah song. I proclaim good news to the poor, release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the onset, the time, the year of the Lord's favor. I wonder if he was playing back his mom's song in his head. That just as he had heard so many times before, he was remembering and recalling that prenatal sound, recalling the promises and the background while his brain was even forming. Now Mary, much older, was also there. And this time, though, when Jesus was offering the word, I wonder if, now she's silent. because things have reversed. There's kind of a switch of roles going on here. Did she lean back while sitting with the other women separated from the men in the gathering? Did she smile with pride? Or did she frown with some anxiety? Or maybe was it both, realizing that now something is going to happen? God's plan, God's purpose, God's song keeps finding its way into us and into our gatherings, into our awareness, into our agenda. Newcomers join today, and the task is not to assimilate them. I'll have to say that again. The task with the new members is not to assimilate them. It's not to teach them to sing like we do. It is not to try to coerce or constrain or get them to comply with something, to know which pew they're supposed to be in and which one, well, that one's reserved, thank you very much. Well, we know better. But isn't the reality that instead the task is to realize that the arrival of new ones changes the community? That whatever this place used to be no longer exists? I don't know. Do they join us or do we join them? We need a kind of a pronoun check, right? Because together, we're remembering the old song. Together, we're remembering the old prayer. Together, we offer and share in the same responsibilities of life in the community. We all learn the song. We all learn the song that's been sung so many times before. If I say the name Gustav Holst, do you know who I mean? Some are smiling, some are going, that sounds like an old guy. He was an old guy. Died in 1934. Do you remember the big symphony, The Planets? Bum, 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 bum. It's just beautiful music. He was a composer and crafted refrains that were majestic and splendid. He died in 1934, which is the same year that somebody else was born. Not much happening in the world in those days. This one who was born in 34, his name was William Whitelaw. He is a lyricist, a crafter of words and languages, a poet, really. And so right there at that intersection, something happened in 1934. As Holst was dying and Whitelaw was born, out popped a song that we're actually going to sing together. It's the hymn of the day. It will it'll stir you a little bit. Maybe it could be for us like a prayer. Maybe it could be for us like an intersection between what has been and now what will be. That we'll offer that together, realizing that something is sticking deep to us, adhering to the soul of all that we share together.